Welcome to the Roadmap to Wealth show. The show is hosted by the Invest Tribe community, a total European resource for anyone looking to succeed in all sorts of investing. Real estate, stock market, bonds and ETFs, cryptocurrency, foreclosure, peer-to-peer lending, business and startups. Before we get to today's interview, if you are a new listener, be sure to go to investtribe.org and subscribe, because we offer content, tools, and an international community of experts, newbies, and everyone in between to help people to learn investing, network, find partners, deals, and financing, and make the best investing decisions possible. Let us start the show.
Welcome to another episode of the Roadmap to Wealth podcast, where you will get a valuable insight to real estate, personal finance, and wealth building strategies. Today, we are going to speak with real estate investment expert Chantal Matthews. Thank you for coming today, Chantal. How are you today?
Hello, good morning. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here. Everything is very good. I try to look on the positives. I'm definitely a half glass, half full type of person. So it's a fantastic day. Let's get on.
Of course, thank you. So I know there's still room to my introduction, but maybe you will introduce yourself.
Yes, so I am, my name is Chantal Matthews. I run a couple of companies, one of which is Endless Property Solutions. I help investors invest in property to build wealth over the long term. I'm also a non-executive financial director, an ex-accountant, mother of two, jack of all trades, basically. My passion for property probably started when I was about 4 years old. My parents moved us from Johannesburg in South Africa, you can probably hear from my accent, to a beautiful area in the northeast of South Africa called Zanine, and we moved to a lovely farm with all our family. And I watched my parents, I was tiny, I was about 4 years old, watched them self-build our home that we lived in. My dad built the bricks at night when he got home from work, and he would lay the bricks the next night. And this sort of grew this passion for property within me. Fast forward a few years, and when I was 24, I bought my own property, did that one up. So I bought an old half derelict property, made quite a bit of money on that one. And that's when the bug really bit me, when I saw what was possible with property. I then skipped too many steps and jumped straight into development. Got my fingers burned pretty badly, lost everything. At the same time, we went through a pretty traumatic experience in South Africa. And it was time for me to make some difficult decisions. That's when packed up, sold the few things that we had left, and moved to the UK with my two kids. Arrived slap bang in the last recession. So probably my timing wasn't the best thing. Timing always seems to be a little bit off with me. Mm-hmm. But moved to the UK in the last recession. Got a couple of jobs that helped me free my time up to spend more time with my children, because in South Africa I was in the motor industry. It was very time consuming. I was working 60, 70 hours a week. It wasn't very good for a single mum trying to look after your kids and do all of this at the same time. So when I moved to the UK, one of the top priorities was for me to spend more time with the children. Hence, when I arrived here, I found a part-time job, did some financial controlling, some accounting. But I didn't have my degree or my diploma in South Africa. I went straight from A-levels or the end of school, your matriculation, straight into work. And I found it pretty difficult in the UK to get paid my worth without having any letters behind my name. So at 37, mature learner, I went to college, got my diploma in accounting. After I received my diploma, I started up my own accounting business, grew that over the 5 years to a bank of over 80 clients, but still wasn't happy. That thing that drove me, that passion inside my belly, I couldn't use it. I wasn't in property. I was a tenant. I was renting. And then while I was running the accounting business and we were tenants in the property, we got issued an eviction notice, a Section 21, because our landlord died. I wasn't in a position to buy a home. Everything I had was pumped into the business. All my capital, my finance, everything was within the business. So I had to think outside the box. So I did a bit of juggling and a bit of negotiating with my son and all sorts of things. And we managed to buy our first property not using any of our own money. And this really sparked some interest in me. I mean, what else is possible with property? If you can buy a home not using any of your own money, what else could you do? So I signed up for a couple of training seminars, and slowly but surely I grew my knowledge in property. And then last year I was faced with the position that my key member of staff that I trained from the ground up to take over the accounting practice or to run it for me while I followed my passion in property. She got to me and said, well, it's time for me to start my family now. I want to go on maternity leave. So what do I do? Do I turn my back on my passion again and go full ball into the accounting, or do I sell the accounting and go into property full time? And that's what I did. Sold the accounting practice to go spend 100% of my time in property. That was September last year. In December last year, because of all the stress and everything, I got really poorly. So during that time, I thought, well, I'm not the type of person just to sit around and be lazy. Maybe I'll write a book. In all the years of networking, trying to build my business, everybody always asks, how do you pick the right accountant? So in all my other training, people said, find the problem, solve the problem. So that's what I did. I wrote the book, How to Find an Accountant. In January this year, the property started taking off nicely. So in this property solutions, I'd grown my network nicely. There were a few deals that were coming in, and then COVID came and everything just shut down. So I still had bills to pay. We still had mortgages to make up and all sorts of things. What do I do now? So I trained to trade the stock markets, and that now pays the bills. So every day I do a bit of trading for a few hours and make sure the bills are paid, and I spend my time in property. And it doesn't feel like a job. Because I love what I do so much, it's not work. To me, it's a joy to get up in the morning and go and look at a house or discuss the proposal of a property with an investor. I love listening to people's problems and try and find solutions for them. I'm very much a problem solver. So what makes us different from most deal sources out there, most deal sources will go and find the deals and then they'll broadcast that out to their list of investors, where we work really closely with the investor. We sit down, we plan, we look at what it is that they want to achieve, what's the best way of achieving that, and then we work step by step forward through that plan with them. So basically, in a nutshell, that's it.
It's an amazing story, Chantal. So, but it's a successful story, but every successful story has their setbacks. How did you deal with those situations in the past?
Well, probably not the best way in most circumstances. I usually explode first and I think, okay, hang on, take a breath, think about it. And when you sit down and you think about it, I tend to think on three lines. What is the problem? Why has this problem happened? What's caused the problem? And how can we solve it? And when I'm looking at solutions, there's always minimum of three solutions to every problem. And that way, if something does, let's say, for instance, you buy a property and the problem is getting it through conveyance, so actually completing on the deal. Why has it happened? Maybe you've picked the wrong solicitor or conveyancer to help you. How are you going to fix it? Well, you have three options. You can either sit on your solicitor's head and push them every day by email and make them listen to you, or you pick a different solicitor, or you take advice from somebody next time. So that's how I tend to deal with those first blow up, which I know I shouldn't do. I should first take a step back. But generally, I'm a bit passionate. So yeah, the blow up happens first, but always break it down, bite-sized pieces.
Thank you very much, Chantal. As an expert property investor, what is the best time to buy a property? Do you have certain rules maybe to follow it? So tell me about it.
Definitely, definitely. So the best time to buy a property is 20 years ago.
Ah, yes. No, 100 years ago. It's even better.
There are a few key things that you need to look for. So first of all, supply and demand. Make sure that the area or the place that you're picking to invest in has supply and demand. So shortage of supply, loads of demand, box ticked. Next, it depends on your strategy. So there are so many different strategies within property. I mean, there's buy-to-lets, HMOs, serviced accommodation, rent-to-rent, there's loads. And that's just scraping the tip of the iceberg. When I started the property training, I had no idea what was possible within property. And so you start getting into that industry and you start talking to people, listening to them. There's just so much possible. So have a clear view on what your strategy is, and that will depict what type of areas you go for. For instance, you're not going to open an HMO in the middle of Wales where you're 20 miles from the nearest train station. You're going to have it close to a city centre where your train station or your bus commute is within walking distance of your property. It depends whether you're buying for the long term or the short term. That will also depict your area. Now, as an investor myself, I tend to buy for the long term, buy hold strategy. But some investors don't. Some investors buy flip, repair, flip the property. So it all depends on what your plan is with the property. What is your long term and short term goal within that? Now, there's five on the website, on my website, there's five rules of when to buy a property. I suggest that your listeners maybe go and read up on that article. So I've done a whole article on there on the five rules of when to buy a property. Every country has different rules, regulations, little quirks when it comes to buying property. So I would suggest wherever you are in the world, wherever you're planning on investing, check your supply and demand. Network with property investors and find out about the rules and regulations in your country. In the UK, we have the RLNA, National Landlords Association, which is a great form of information. I get a lot of my information from networking with professionals that have been in the game a lot longer than I have. I mean, some of the gentlemen that I network with have been property investors for 50, 60 years, and it's great just to listen to their knowledge about the market and how they dip and how they fall and what happens to that. So, yeah, the best time to buy, like I say, is probably now or 20 years ago, but we can't go back in time.
Yes, of course, we can go back. Thank you for all this advice. It's very valuable. Now we speak about pandemic. We are with the pandemic now. How can we convince investors it's still safe to invest? Is it a still safe time to invest right now? What do you think?
Well, it makes me think of a little saying called, in the UK, they use a saying called safe as houses. And if you've got your supply and your demand, if you've picked the right area, then yes, it is still safe to invest. Property is cyclical. So that means it has cycles, it has ups and downs, just like the stock market, just like any industry. There are peaks and troughs in every industry. If you think about it, mobile phones. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, mobile phones weren't really much of a thing. It wasn't as popular as what it is now. Your tech companies didn't do as well 20 years ago as what they're doing now. Property has ups and downs, and if you try and wait and sit back and time the market, it could come back and bite you. So as long as you've done your homework correctly and you've done your due diligence on your patch, on your property, on your type of tenants that you're going to have in the property or what your plan is with the property, then yes, it is still safe to buy in the pandemic. I've actually done two deals during the pandemic with investors, and they're very happy with what we found for them. Depends on the person, depends what they want to achieve through property. Just make sure that you buy within the right place for the right price. Use negotiation too. I think a lot of people don't negotiate to the full capabilities. So when you're thinking of buying a property, whether it's in a pandemic or not, go through that property with a fine-tooth comb, because this is going to become your baby. This is a long-term thing. For most people, not very many people look at the flip strategy. A lot of people buy property for the long term, 20, 30, 40 years, or even to leave to the next generation. Is this house or property that you're looking at going to stand the test of time? And even if you buy, let's say, for instance, you bought a property in 2010 or 2009 during the last recession, right up at the peak, just before the property market dropped. Most areas in the UK have surpassed where it was in 2010. So it came right down, yes, but it's gone past where it was before. So you've still made your money, you just have to sit and wait. A loss is only a loss if you materialize the loss. So if you've got a property and it's at a loss at the moment, hold it, wait with it, because over the long term, that loss will become a gain.
Thank you very much, Chantal. What are the factors that should be considered when to invest?
So there are five keys to picking what we call your patch. So your patch is your investment area. The five keys to picking your patch is one, population. It's always good to have an area with a population of over 150,000, because that means you've got a decent bank of people, a high demand for tenants, a growing population. Make sure that that place that you're picking is rate of increase of population is higher than the national average of the country that you're purchasing in, and that will also ensure that there will be demand on the long term. Next is your area, the actual area, the topography, the land. In the area that I invest in, there's quite a few old mine shafts in the area. So you've got to get to know your area really well. Which are the bad areas, which are the good? I mean, if you buy a property over a mine shaft, you won't get a mortgage on the property. So these are all type of things that you need to learn about when you're looking at your patch. Is it geographically a flood zone? I mean, if it's in a flood zone, you won't get insurance on your property. So take all of these things into account when you're looking for your property. Next is your transport links. So are there very good transport links to either a major city or a big industrial hub close by? Major cities and industrial hubs, these are where people go to work. So if you're within a good commuting distance of that, which our patch is, we're only 45 minutes away from a really big city, and so it ticks that box. We have good train links, good transport links via bus routes and everything, and that then ticks that box. So make sure that you're in a good transport network within that patch that you pick. You don't want to be out in the bushes somewhere where a person needs to drive 40 minutes to get to work.
Yes, for sure.
Of that in nature, but that's a very small niche, and you want to try and have a broad spectrum, a nice wide net to catch all of those tenants. Then back onto the transport. So I mentioned in there that you want to be pretty close to a city. So when you're close to a city, you can either be close to a city or close to a major hub, like I said, industrial. But it's always good to have a look and see that your town or your area has a hospital. Hospitals are a fantastic source of tenants. You have all these nurses, all these doctors, and they all need places to live. A lot of them don't stay at the same hospital for long. A lot of them move and get transferred. And that's why they tend to rent instead of purchase their homes. So it's very good to have a look for a hospital close to a city. And then last of all, supply and demand. Make sure your area has demand. And as a little trick to finding out if your area has demand is phone up the estate agents, phone up the letting agents. Ask them how long it takes for the average property to rent out. What rents out the most? One bedroom, two bedroom, single lets, multi lets? Just speak to them. Have a conversation. Property is all about people. It's not about the bricks and mortar. It's about people. Building relationships with people.
Thank you very much for your answer. Can you explain to us what are three C's of property investing?
Certainly. The three C's of property investing, to me, are the key. Before you even think of property investing, you should think of these three C's. Your first C is to have clarity. What is it? A clear picture, a vision. What is it that you want to achieve through property? Do you want to retire early? Do you want to supplement your income? Do you want to leave your job? Do you want to leave a legacy for your children? Once you have that clarity of what it is that you want to achieve, picking your strategy going forward will be easier for you. So, the first C, clarity. Your next C is cash flow. Now, cash flow is king. Cash makes the world go round. We all know this. And when I say cash, I don't physically mean notes anymore. It's just about cash flow.
Yeah.
Any business cannot be a business. And remember, property investing is a business. It's not just an investment strategy. It's a business. You need to run it as a business. So make sure that your property is a positive cash flowing property after everything's paid. After your mortgage, after your insurance, after your management costs, even allow for void periods in your property. Once you've allowed for all of that, if you've still got a positive cash flow in property, that's good. The last one is capital appreciation. Now, this is what makes property investors wealthy over the long term. Capital appreciation. Now, I can speak for the UK mainly because that's where we invest. That's where our investment patch is.
Of course, of course.
And over the UK, generally speaking, now this is all averages, over 20 years, your properties double in value. Now that's why your previous question, when to
yes,
buy?
20 years ago,
because it would be double its value now. And like you said, 100 years ago, it'd be five times its value now. Mm-hmm. So you want to look for an area with good capital appreciation. So if we take an example in the UK, if you go from the middle of the country down south, your capital appreciation seems to be higher down south, anywhere close to London or around the London. Within an hour and a half of London, your capital appreciation is fantastic.
Yeah.
You will definitely get that double in value over your 20 years. The further north you go, the less capital appreciation you have. Whereas there's areas, for instance, Aberdeen up in Scotland, mm-hmm. they've had a crisis because the oil industry has hit them so hard. This was an oil hub. And with so many refineries and everything closing down recently, there's now a flood of properties on the market because there's no more workers, there's no more tenants, and that has brought the value of property right down. So you want to get that good mix of where you get a decent cash flow for your property, but you get that capital appreciation because that's what's going to make you wealthy over the long term.
Yeah.
So those are your three C's, clarity, mm-hmm. cash flow, and capital appreciation.
Thank you, Chantal. It's very, very interesting. So you want to help property investors that they have little time available to find property investment. How do you extend to help them?
Okay, so the best way of me explaining this is to give you two case studies or two examples of clients that we've worked with. Our first client that we worked with, our very first deal that we did, is a husband and wife. The wife inherited some money a few years back. And like most people, the first thing they did when they inherited the money is they settled their mortgage on their home. Yes, we're mortgage-free, we're free, we have no debt on the house. But she was working a couple of jobs trying to make ends meet. The husband's a builder. He was really busy working long days, weekends, on projects. They didn't have much time, although the wife had a bit of time on her hands to look at properties and view properties and stuff. They also didn't have the know-how, how to calculate the return on investment. Is the property cash flowing? What type of structural issues to look for in the property? So what we did is we sat down, we had a meeting with them, and discussed with them what is it that they wanted to achieve. And once we had this discussion with them, it turns out that the husband, he's getting on, he's in his mid-40s now. Being a builder in your mid-40s or middle life, it becomes more challenging. He had back issues at the problem at the time, struggling to get up for work because of his back pain, and the wife was really desperate to spend more time with their two daughters. So I made the suggestion to them, why don't we mortgage your house again, just at 50% loan to value? That means the amount of debt that you have to the value of your house. Take that 50% mortgage and go and put that into an investment property. Nice little single, buy-to-let, nothing fancy, no fancy strategies because they're very risk-averse people. Let's just put it into that little property so we can just start generating this, what they call passive income. And that's what we did. It took us a good while to find the right deal for them, the right property that ticked all their boxes, because they had certain things that they wanted to make sure. It had to be in this particular area, had to be a 3-bedroom property. They wanted something that was good for families. And so we had a look. We managed to find them something. And I'm pleased to say that the property is now being fully renovated and their tenant moves in this weekend. Mm. So the money that this deal is going to generate will now ensure that the wife doesn't have to go to work anymore. And the wife
Fantastic.
Can now, that's what it's all about. She can now spend that time with the children, and she now has the time freedom to go and have a look for more investment deals. She doesn't need to use me going forward. The other example is a couple that own a very successful business. They are both extremely busy. They're working up to 100 hours a week on the business, and they just don't have the time. The business is successful, therefore it's generating income, and we're busy building their portfolio. So they've already got one investment property, we're in the conveyance on their second property now, and so we're building up a pension supplement pot for them. Although they've got the business and they will be selling the business or moving further away from the business over time, we want something else that's a little bit less risky for the long term for their pension, so that they don't have to worry about it in retirement. They know that they can retire comfortably and still maintain their standard of living.
It's absolutely fantastic. I love it. Thank you, Chantal. Can you share your knowledge about different property strategy investment strategies? For example, buy-to-let, house of multiple occupancy, service accommodations, flips, and refurbish, refinance, and rent out strategies.
Certainly. I hope we've got a few hours, though, because this could take some time.
Yes. Go ahead.
Right. So generally, people start off with your single BTL or buy-to-let. That's BTL, not BLT, not bacon, lettuce, and tomato. We're looking at a buy-to-let property. This is where you have one family or one individual or a couple, a single let you have one AST, a shared hold tenancy agreement on that property. It's a good starting block because it teaches you about the rules and regulations, what you need to do and what you don't need to do when renting out a property. The next step is a multi-let or an HMO, a house of multiple occupancy. These can be anything from three people from different households that live within the same property. Now, with HMOs, there's a thick, thick rule book. There are so many things that you need to know about an HMO. Probably not worth me going into all of them today. But what I would advise you to do, that if you are looking at HMO strategy, have a look in your patch. Each council or each county, or if you're in America, your state, they will have rules and regulations that differ from area to area. And in that area, contact your council or your state and ask them, what are your rules regarding multiple occupancy or HMOs? Make sure that you do things according to the book, because I know from first-hand experience, after losing everything going into a dodgy development deal, it just takes one mistake and it can put you back 20 years. So do it all by the book. Make sure that you do your due diligence and make sure that you communicate with people. Another very good thing to do if you're going to go into a more advanced strategy like HMO or service accommodation is to get a mentor. Get somebody that's done it before you. Pay them for their time and let them show you how it's done. Just make sure that when you pick your mentor, you're picking the right mentor, somebody that's been successful. It's great these days. We have the internet. You can find out anything about a person on the internet. So go and do your homework on the people before you sign up to do mentorship with them is what I would advise. We then have things like SAs or serviced accommodations, holiday lets. Fantastic in the UK at the moment. These were hit very hard during COVID, but a lot of people thought outside the box. They just changed the strategies a bit. They were prepared to take a reduced rate and they got NHS workers that wanted to self-isolate in their properties. So those that thought outside the box, that were entrepreneurial, managed to stand the test of time. And I can guarantee you they're very happy they did that today. Because at the moment, trying to get a serviced accommodation unit in the UK is a nightmare. It's just so much demand out there. People don't want to take the risk of booking flights. They want a staycation. They want to stay at home or within their country, and they want to vacation there. That means that holiday accommodation and SA units are making a killing at the moment. And I think this is going to last for quite a while until we have a vaccine or some sort of clarity on what's going to happen around COVID. This trend or pattern will carry on when it comes to serviced accommodation. Another thing to note about serviced accommodation is this is 100% a business. You are fully business. It's not even, you can do it on a rent-to-rent model. You can even buy the property. Just remember, it's a business. Run it like a business. It is possible to automate 90% of the business, but I would suggest doing it all yourself at first. That way, when you automate or you use virtual assistants and those type of people, you know what level of service to expect from these people if you've done it yourself. You know what are the goods and the bads, what are the problem areas. So if they come and they spin you a yarn or spin you a story about, oh, the cleaner couldn't get out there and change the linen today, you know that it's a story because you've experienced it firsthand, you've done it yourself firsthand. It's definitely a more hands-on strategy than, say, for instance, a single let. Single let or a buy-to-let is probably your least hands-on strategy. Other than that, the less hands-on strategy than that would be a joint venture where you work with somebody else, you just supply the money and they do the work. You then have your rent-to-rent models. Now, these have become very popular over the last, I would say, 5 years or so, especially where we have investors with limited funds, but they want to grow their portfolio or they want to grow their capital quite quickly. It works great when you do serviced accommodation. It works great when you do HMOs or multi-lets. A lot of the older landlords that are looking at retiring because of all the tax changes within the UK recently are very happy to give the property to somebody else and let them manage it, let them do the work. Invariably, with your rent-to-rent, the things to have a look for there is, one, your contracts. Don't skimp on your solicitors or your lawyers. Make sure that you get the right professionals in place to draw up the right contracts. if you speak to some people will say subletting is illegal. If you have the right legal contracts in place, it's not illegal. That's why you have to make sure that you use the correct solicitor. The great way to pick up these solicitors is to go to property networking events. There will always be solicitors, accountants, those type of people at the property networking events. Ask for recommendations from the other attendees and they will be able to help you. Another thing to look out for in your rent-to-rent strategy is to make sure that you put a break clause in your lease. So invariably, these leases will be 3 or 5 year leases. Make sure that you put a break clause in at 6 months and then maybe at 1.5 years or halfway through again, just in case you, by some slim chance, pick the wrong property in the wrong area for the strategy that you want to work on that property. You have an out. Next up, we have flips. Flips are great, but they're also pretty risky. If you think about it, at the moment, property prices are skyrocketing in the UK. It's fantastic. Yes.
It's not the moment, actually, for flips right now.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I wouldn't suggest anybody buy a property for a flip right now. Mm-hmm. However, those that bought flips a few months ago and have finished the works are smiling all the way to the bank at the moment. So with a flip, it's a very advanced strategy. You've got to know your market. You've got to know your market well, so that you can time that market very well. Your best place to find deals for flips would be auctions, deal sources, or direct to vendors. So speaking to the people that want to sell.
Yes, networking events and this kind of thing. Yes.
That is definitely your best place to pick up a flip. Auctions are still the best. Mm-hmm. Beware, auction comes with this whole own can of worms. You need to know what you're doing. What I would suggest to anybody, if you were thinking of buying on auction, I would say attend 10 auctions before you put your paddle in the air. By attending those 10 auctions, you will see what happens within the room. There's a chap by the name, I can't remember his surname. His first name is Martin. He comes from Homes Under the Hammer, the TV program. He's got quite a good presence online, and he gives quite a lot of information and stuff away. If you can ever attend one of his events or look at his information, I would strongly advise it. It gives you a lot of information about auctions. For instance, did you know that an auctioneer has the right to pull a bid from the air? So that could be a fictitious bid. He could just point to the wall and say, okay, 50,000. It doesn't have to be somebody with their paddle up in the air. So when it comes to auctions, legal pack, legal pack, legal pack, legal pack. I cannot say this enough, the legal pack. And I know it is a headache reading through all that legal jargon, but the more you read through them, the faster you'll become and the more things you'll pick up on there. For instance, last month I was looking at a property to buy on auction. Hidden right down in the bottom on like the 16th page of the legal pack, there was a little note in there that said that you're due to pay an extra £10,000 on top of the auction fees, on top of the property purchase price. Now, when you're working at 50, 60, 70,000 pound properties, that's a lot of money. That's a big percentage of your purchase price of the property. And you could easily miss that if you didn't read the auction pack. So, yeah, flips, BRRs are very similar. BRR is buy, refurbish, refinance, rent out. It's my favorite strategy. It is a strategy that investors have been using for many years, and it's a way of recycling your money, getting your money back out, using it for the next deal. However, you can also leave money within these properties if you get your figures a bit wrong. What we tend to do for some of our clients, for instance, this builder client that we worked with, is they weren't looking to pull all their money out. They were happy to leave a few thousand pounds within the deal. We managed to find the right property for them. When you're looking for a BRR project, definitely auctions, direct to vendors, or deal sources. What I would say, if you're going to use a deal sourcer for your BRR project, make sure that they are compliant. Make sure that they're registered with the property redress scheme. Make sure that they have recommendations. Go and speak to those people that have given recommendations online. It's very easy to build somebody up online, but it's difficult to lie to somebody's face. You just go and ask the person. Go and look who gave them a recommendation. Contact that person. Give them a DM and say, by the way, I see you've given Joe Soap a recommendation. How was it? Was there anything I'm thinking of using him? Would you advise me on anything to look out for? BRR, another thing to remember is when you're buying a BRR property, you don't buy a BRR straight into a mortgage product. You generally use cash or a bridging loan, bridging finance, to bridge you into your mortgage product. So make sure that your figures, your numbers, triple check them, quadruple check them.
Yes.
Make sure that you've allowed for contingency plans. So if you've got a quote from your builder, add an extra 10% onto that quote, guaranteed it. The quote is never the right price with the builder. Any builder, any tradesperson, I always add an extra 10% onto their quote and make sure that that contingency is built within my figures. If the deal works out on that, then it's a good deal. So, yeah, BRR, remember, you're going to be buying for cash. You're going to be buying for bridging. Bridging can be very expensive. Make sure that you keep your time frame on your bridging quite. You want to keep 6 months to a year, nothing over there, because you're going to get penalized. When you're looking at bridging finance, make sure that you have a look at your entrance fees and your exit fees. Again, a bit like auctions, these are hidden away down at the bottom. Ask them the question. They won't give you the information freely unless you ask for it. So ask them, what are your entrance fees? What are your exit fees? Because they could have a really doable rate. Now, most of the time, I'm speaking ballpark averages here again. Your bridging finance, you're looking at about 1% a month in interest that you're paying. So it's quite high. It's about 12% a year in interest that you're paying. But your exit and your entrance fees can cost you more than a whole year's worth of interest if you don't go for the right bridging finance. When you go from bridging to mortgage product, it's very important to have the right mortgage advisor. There are so many mortgage advisors out there, but make sure that you deal with somebody that specializes in dealing with property professionals, somebody that knows all the tricks of the trades, because there's products out there that will give you a bridge and then straight into your mortgage after the bridge. But definitely speak to the right professionals. You want that power team in place.
Thank you very much, Chantal. It was absolutely amazing explanation. And I think that somebody new to real estate who is listening for us now, they learn a lot more about how the things happen, at least in UK. So the next question is, as a property investor, I know you look for different properties that have the profit potential for you and your clients. So what do you look for in a property?
Numbers. It's all about the numbers. You invest in property with formulas, not with feelings. Property is very much, we all have a bit of a passion when it comes to property. Whether we walk into a viewing of a house, and, oh, that would be great if we did this and that and the purple wall there and then maybe a feature here. Don't look at it that way. This is a business. It needs to be about formulas, not feelings. So the first thing I have a look at before I even do a viewing on the properties, I check the numbers. If the numbers don't work, I don't bother booking a viewing. I don't even waste my time. So I also sign up for notifications. So emails, hundreds of emails a day, get notifications from every different portal that does advertise property is what I would suggest to people when you're looking for a property, and then work your numbers. When you're working your numbers, remember the small little things like allowing for void periods, your mortgage payments, insurance. I've seen people forget insurances. If you're using a deal sourcer, make sure that you factor that in when you're working out your return on investment on your property, so that you know that it's going to work out, that you're getting that return on investment. Again, it comes to your three C's, clarity, cash flow, and capital appreciation. You can't achieve any one of those if you don't work the numbers properly. So before I even look at a property, I look at the numbers. Then we get to look at the property. First tip to viewing a property is stand back, stand right back from the property. Have a look at the roof. People forget about the roof. Have a look at the chimney. Have a look at the drains. Have a look for structural issues, cracks. Have a look at the state of the property. Remember, the two best ways to add value to a property is replace the kitchen, replace the bathroom. Build that in your figures. And basically, you can't go wrong. If you work with your numbers and you make sure that you get a structurally sound property, Bob's your uncle.
Thank you very much, Chantal. So what are tips that you can give to your fellow investors or aspiring investors?
Persevere. Learn how to accept no. We view probably about 20 properties a week. We put in an offer on every single property that we view, and we get about an 80% no ratio. So get comfortable with being rejected. Get comfortable with speaking to people, because like I said before, property is a people business. It's not about the bricks and mortar. It's about people. It's about solving people's problems. Hence why the name of my business is Endless Property Solutions, because you need to find what the problem is that that person is having. Why do they want to sell? Everybody has a reason why they want to sell their house. What is their reason? When you know that why, it's always better to get a better deal. And numbers, I just cannot push that hard enough. It's all about, and if you're not good with numbers, partner up or team up with somebody that's good with accounting or good with numbers. Get them to do. I use a great little tool called DealSourcer.com, which works fantastically in the UK. And I pop in the link from the portal, and it works it all out for me, and it saves me hours of time. So definitely a network, 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 network. The bigger your network of people and individuals around you, it can get pretty exhausting. I'm quite an introvert, actually. But I force myself to do the networking because you never know where your next deal is going to come from. You never know if the person sitting next to you at a networking event is going to be your next business partner in property. Mm-hmm. You just never know these things. So, yeah, persevere, get used to know, work the numbers. If you can't work the numbers, buddy up with somebody that can work the numbers, because it's all about numbers and people.
Thank you very much, Chantal. It's absolutely fantastic advice. With you accepting our invitation to Garas on show today, sharing your knowledge in property investment and giving out investment strategies, where can our listeners learn more?
Well, the best place to learn more is probably to sign up to my mailing list. So if they go to Endless Property Solutions, that's endless as in never ending, property and then solutions as in problem solving. .co.uk, there's a big red button on there. If they click the button, sign up to the mailing list, we send out to the one constant is every single week, I send out an email to all my subscribers. And in that email, we generally have a little bit on mindset, a little bit on business in general, and then some property news. So what's happening in the market? I try and go out, do the networking and everything, and share that knowledge with my followers. That's probably the best place to keep up to date. We're on all social media, but the most constant is the mailing list. I do post on social media, but I, like I said, I'm a bit of an introvert, so I do find it difficult with social media. I know we should do more, but I really find it difficult. But the emails, it's in your inbox every Thursday, and it's all packed with property information.
Thank you, Chantal. Can you enlighten us, what is your 7P's property investment?
Oh, so yeah, I look at these as the 7 P's to property investing. One is your plan. Winston Churchill said, those who fail to plan, plan to fail. And throughout my life, in any position that I've had, any business that I've run, always plan, action, tweak, plan, action, tweak, repeat. And you just carry on. So yes, the plan. You need a plan, a vision, clarity. You need to know where you're going. Two is your patch, your area. Finding the right area. It took me 6 months to find the right area when I started my property journey. So it is a bit time consuming. So the sooner you can get on to finding your patch, the better. Next is your power team. Now, we touched on this a little bit sooner. Power team is the key people that you need to progress in property. Now, I think this is the same no matter where you are in the world. You need a solicitor or a conveyancer, somebody that's going to get the deal across the line. You then need a finance or a mortgage advisor or a financial advisor, somebody that can arrange the finance for you, because there's very few of us in the world that can just go out and buy properties cash. You'll then need a maintenance person or a builder, somebody that's on the end of the phone, the tap's leaking, somebody you can send out. It's good, I would say, to have a few different tradespeople and to have a backup for your list. So if you've got one builder, one plumber, one electrician, what happens when they're on leave? Who's going to go and sort a problem? It's always good to have a minimum of 2, preferably 3 of those power team members on your list. Then you need, most importantly, before you even start property, a tax advisor. As an ex-accountant, it never ceases to amaze me how few people pay for proper tax advice and how much it costs them in the long run. So find yourself a decent property tax advisor. There's loads of accountants out there. Some of them are good, some of them are bad. Ask for recommendations, exactly like what you said earlier. Go to the networking event of property. Make sure that your tax advisor invests in property themselves, because then they will know all the tricks that lowest tax bill possible, because that's what we want. We don't want to avoid tax. We just want to pay the lowest legal amount.
Of course. Absolutely.
Next is perception. What do you see? So perception is viewing. Look at the property. Look at the area. When I'm going to view a property, I generally go at least 3 times to the property before we put in an offer. I go late at night, go early in the morning, and then during the day again. I know of somebody that bought an HMO in a city, set it up and everything, and it was great. The HMO was doing very well. He then had to attend a seminar in that area. He had a free room in his HMO that was empty. It was void at the time. He stayed in there and he walked to the seminar, walked back late at night. And on his way back late at night, he was proposed to by 3 different women on street corners. And he never had an idea that this was happening in this area that he had this HMO because he hadn't visited the area late at night. But yeah, definitely visit your area at least 3 different times of the day. One must be late at night. Listen to and have a look. Perception, what is going on? Next is profits. This is a business, people. Businesses make profits. You want to make a profit. You want a cash flow and you want that capital appreciation. Remember your 3 C's. Following P is put in an offer. Don't be afraid to put in low offers. Have a look at your numbers. Calculate what the property is worth. So generally, before I go, I do my numbers on what I can see on the images that I've been sent. I then go and view the property. I've got a 3-page form that I fill in when I'm viewing the property. Write down as much as you can. Take a video. Take loads of photos when you're in the property, because when you get back home, you'll remember that you saw something in the kitchen, but you can't remember what it was. Take as many photos as you possibly can while you're in the property. When you get back, work your numbers again, and then put in your offer according to what it is that you want to achieve. So if you want to achieve a 20% return on investment on your money, you're going to adjust your offer accordingly. So if the property is on the market for $150,000 and you want to achieve a 20% return, but you're still going to replace the kitchen and the bathroom, do your sums on all of that. And make sure that after you've done all the work, you're still achieving your 20% return on investment if you put in an offer of 120. It doesn't matter if they're asking 150, because they're asking 150 doesn't mean that's what the property is worth. Remember, property is only worth, or anything in the world is only worth, what somebody's prepared to pay for it. The last of all is proceedings. So if you've got the right power team in place, your proceedings will happen quite smoothly. It's when you have the wrong power team in place, when you have the wrong solicitor, that proceedings can be a bit tricky. Surefire way of speeding all of your proceedings up is being prepared. I was a brownie and a girl guide when I was a child, and I still live by those mottos today. Be prepared. I have a folder in Dropbox where my proof of income, proof of ID, proof of address, we all know about financial documents, what you're going to be asked for when you're trying to get finance, what you're going to be asked for when you're trying to buy a property. Have all that documentation in date ready in a Dropbox folder. So when you're contacting your professional to do your proceedings, it can happen pretty quickly. There's no hold up from your side. That also gives you leverage to hammer down on them if they're not giving you the service that you expect.
Thank you very much, Chantal. It's absolutely fantastic advice. So the next question is, do you have any particular person that you look up to?
Yes, I do.
Can you share with us?
Yes. I was a little girl and my aunt was 19 years old and she was in a motor car accident and she came out a paraplegic, so she lost use of her legs from the waist down.
Sorry to hear it.
She was amazing. She never let it get her down. No matter what life, you know the saying, lemons and lemonade? Well, yeah. This woman made more than lemonade with her lemons. It was amazing. She would get up every morning and she would smile. It doesn't matter that she's got abscesses all over her body from lying in bed because she couldn't get into a wheelchair. She just got up and she smiled and she still achieved so much in life, even though she had these problems. So, yes, the person that I look up to is her. Obviously, I've got my business mentors and those type of people that I look up to. But when I think we all have those lows in our life, or those pits where you're like, oh, goodness, no, not again. What else can happen to us? When you get to that stage, it's good to have that role model, that person that you can look to and think, you know what, they smile. No matter what life dealt at them, no matter how much rubbish it chucked in their way, they still got up, they still smiled, and they carried on.
Thank you very much, Chantal. The next question is a little bit tricky. Knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to your 20 years old self?
Don't be so lazy. Invest in yourself. Knowledge is key. Learn. I had a bit of a midlife crisis, and that pushed me into spending more on myself, investing more on myself. And that's probably my biggest regret, is that I didn't do it earlier. So if I could speak to my 20-year-old self, I'd say, yeah, stop partying, go to university and learn.
Thank you very much, Chantal. It was very wonderful talking to you. And do you have any advice for our listeners?
Yes, I do. No matter what you think you can do, aim higher. The higher you aim, the more you'll be able to achieve. Persevere, get used to know, and come out of your shell. Speak to people, because when you do, you'll be amazed and astounded what is out there waiting for you.
Thank you very much, Chantal. It's amazing advice. So, Liz, tell me how people can connect with you. Do you have a website, LinkedIn maybe, how they can connect with you if they need to?
Yeah, like we said before, the best way to follow us is through the website, clicking onto the mailing list. But I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. And so Chantal Matthews, Endless Property Solutions. If you type that into any of your social media, I'll pop up somewhere. Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram. I'm all over it.
Thank you very much, Chantal, for your time and sharing your knowledge. You give a lot of valuable advices. I loved it a lot. So it's been very interesting interview. So and I hope to see you soon for another interview. Why not?
I would love that. Thank you so much for having me. It's been fantastic.
Yes, it's been fantastic. Thank you very much and have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you for checking out the show. And don't forget, you can find all the resources, links, and show notes over at investtribe.org. See you next week on the Roadmap to Wealth show.